Cutler from Jason's Connection. I am here to introduce Douglas Manley to Jason Harris from jasonsconnection.org. Douglas Manley is a hairstylist at Salon LA in Cincinnati, Ohio. He has been with Salon LA for 20 years. Originally from Eaton, Ohio, Douglas returned to Ohio after working in Los Angeles, California, and Chicago, Illinois. Douglas was the education leader at the Paul Mitchell School in Cincinnati. He has many interests, including American Sign Language, or ASL, cooking, tap dancing, and many service organizations. The thing that Douglas values the most are the relationships that he has developed through his interests and career. Enjoying life is Douglas's number one priority, and we are really glad to have you here today, Douglas. And here you are being interviewed by Jason Harris from Jason's Connection.
Hey, it's Jason Harris. Good to have you here today, Mr. Manley.
Thank you.
How did you get started with American Sign Language, and what prompted you to begin learning this language?
Well, when I was living in Dayton, Ohio, about 35 years ago, I wanted to take a class. And I thought, well, I'll take French because I took it in high school, and I went to Sinclair Community College to check on taking that, and the class was closed, and the counselor, she said, well, the American Sign Language class is open. If you want to take a language, that's open, and it was definitely not even on my radar. I'd never known anyone deaf, no family members or anything like that, but my connection to an interpreter was the person in the corner of the TV on Sunday mornings, and they always looked like the, you know, the little housewives with the Easter egg earrings and the funny sweaters, and I had no idea what it was. But she convinced me that it was not at all what I thought. And so when I started, from the minute I went in the first class, I fell in love with it because it is absolutely one of the most interesting things that I've ever immersed myself in. It's just so cool the way that the language is set up and the capabilities. That I just love it. It's just fun. Mm-hmm. Plus, being kind of, I mean, I'm so hyper, and you know, with some attention problems myself, it's really fun because it's not only do you hear what you're interpreting, you have to translate it onto your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just speaking the language, you're actually doing the language. And
mm-hmm.
That to me is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's not just, language isn't just speaking, it's actually doing, which is kind of fits me.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start using sign language in your work or outside of the classroom? What prompted that?
Well, pretty much from the get-go. I met a lot of deaf people through classes. They would come in and they would mentor people and they would talk to us and they would really initiate like the comfortability of the language, because it's just like anything, you know, when you learn it in school, but then when you're talking to someone, if you're taking Spanish and someone's from Spain, you freeze up. So they bring in tons of people just to mentor you and make you comfortable. So, you know, cutting hair, mm-hmm. I just was like, well, who cuts your hair? And, you know, just pretty much the way that happened. The nice thing about my experience with the deaf community is there is no uncomfortability. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't know a word, if you don't know a sign, anything, it just comes to you. They show you, they have been really, really interesting in the way that mm-hmm. they help you through that beginning process all the way through, you know, to whatever skill level you are. So,
mm-hmm. Now you talk about Spanish. I know people have said, like Spanish or other languages, there's different dialects or tones or different, each supportive person has their own individual way of talking, even with American Sign Language. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's there are regional signs, there mm-hmm. there are it's American Sign Language. So mm-hmm. when you go to England,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there are similar signs, but I mean, it's yeah. a totally different structure. I mean, I had no idea. I mean, just, you know, being American, I thought just like anywhere else, you go to
mm-hmm.
to Mexico or you go to France, most people speak English. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not the case at all when it comes to sign language. I mean, it's there are a lot of similarities,
mm-hmm.
but it is a different language,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting to me.
Yeah, I hear even with signing with individual people, different people, just the way they move their hand can be a little bit different. So a J from somebody could be a little bit different from a J from somebody else. It'd be sort of simplistic. I'm just, it's more complex than that. But
yeah, the hardest thing to do is to read other people's signs. I mean, it's yeah. easier to interpret something, and because there's no communication
mm-hmm.
involved, you hear it, and then you sign it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking at a sign, that's mm-hmm. where most people, if they have a struggle learning the language, that's much harder because people's fingers are longer,
mm-hmm.
They sign bigger, you know, you have a hard time following them. It's just like anybody else. It's like if somebody, you know, has a really thick British accent mm-hmm. or a Southern accent, sometimes you have to kind of, you know, struggle along a little bit to understand what they're saying. It's like I have a hard time understanding people from Scotland when they roll their R's and all that. I have to, you know, mm-hmm. it takes a minute. So it's the same as that.
Yeah. And you talked about some of the challenges. Was it challenging to learn, or is there still two? What do you think was the most challenging, and what was probably the most rewarding about learning American Sign Language?
Well, the challenges are, I've never looked at it as a challenge because
yeah.
I always did it for an interest. It was never going to be a career.
Mm-hmm.
So if I didn't do that well in a class, or, you know, things didn't come to me as quickly, there was mm-hmm. nothing riding on that. It was basically just for fun to, mm-hmm. to start. It's funny. It's one of the few things that I can go back to
and
I can reference a lot. I've taken Spanish for on and off for years and years and years, and every time I go to speak Spanish, it's like I never took a class. I can't remember, but for some mm-hmm. reason, American Sign Language sticks with me. I really think that it's because you hear it,
mm-hmm.
people say it, and you do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, for me, I always get more when I'm in a book club and we read out loud,
mm-hmm.
because I hear it, I see it, and then I say it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot to that. The challenges are, you know, not knowing
mm-hmm.
like the vocabulary or something like
yeah.
that. But I'm not one of those people that like backs away from an uncomfortable situation. I'll just ask or
yeah.
But it's really an interesting thing to become a part of, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about it, but how have your hearing impaired clients received your ability to communicate in the sign language?
Well, it's fun. The interesting thing is there are, I mean, several deaf clients who come to the salon, and I do two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the other stylists have deaf clients. And it's funny because when I started this, I thought, oh, those poor deaf people, how do they make it through a day?
Mm-hmm.
It must be so hard. They must write notes everywhere when they want groceries at the doctor. I looked at it as how would I do it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's more interesting for me to see a deaf person with someone who doesn't sign
mm-hmm.
because it's so natural. They will do whatever it takes to communicate. And that's very comforting when you're learning sign and all that, because you know that sometimes if you just point at something,
mm-hmm.
that's a perfect sign,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they understand what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
You could sign, look at that, but, you know, if you look at that literally, that's a perfect sign because they understand it. It's just really interesting to see how people who at first I thought were incapable of making it through a day without a struggle just live life. And that's the best, one of the best lessons about getting involved in this was not just that I can communicate with a deaf person. It's like, oh, I had no idea. I was totally clueless on what it meant to be deaf, what it meant to communicate properly, and how to be considerate of people who are different. Because it really is, to me now, it's like someone who speaks French.
Yeah.
When someone comes from France to Cincinnati, I don't go, oh, those poor French people, they probably have to just walk through and write notes and ask someone if they know somebody from France and all that. No, it's just a different language. And it's so cool. It's really cool to know that they don't miss out on things. You know, they don't, it's different, but absolutely every capability that I have, they have.
And so I think, so, I mean, it sounds like when you started, you didn't know anybody who was deaf. Do you now, I mean, through having this and being able to form relationships, do you know a lot of people and hang out with a lot of people who are deaf or hearing impaired?
I do. Now, basically, most of my deaf friends were in Dayton, and a lot of them in California, but through taking some classes at Cincinnati State, they have a great interpreter training program there. I've met a lot of really cool deaf people, and interpreters are really cool people.
Yeah.
I mean, because they get it, you know, and it's nice to see them be interpreters, not people helping somebody less fortunate. That's not the gig at all. It's just they interpret. And it's nice. But yeah, I have a handful of deaf friends here in Cincinnati that are really, really cool.
And you've also been in recovery and are a sponsor. Can you share your experience and story with us, sobriety and helping others?
Sure. Well, my story is pretty typical when it comes to getting sober. You know, basically it was the consequences compounding and things happening that, you know, is typical for anybody who is on the road to recovery and getting clean and sober. But the interesting thing about that is, again, I'm always absolutely backwards on my thoughts. I thought that when I got sober that it was going to be about not drinking, not using drugs. I thought, that's it. That's the point of this. And little did I know that it would be transforming in the way that it has been. I was not a service-oriented person. You know, I mean, I did nice things because my mom told me to. Okay, will you help pick up trash with a group? Sure, it's because I liked the people. I didn't really care. I wasn't there yet. And the cool thing is I didn't realize how much I was missing in me. I mean, there was so much of me that I hadn't even tapped into or knew anything about until I started helping other people. And it was fun, you know, to realize that I could become the person that I never thought I could be. I mean, I never thought that I would be considerate because of my actions in the past. It was just kind of that, it's not going to happen for you. Sorry, you're going to live this life till the day you die and be miserable. But it was only through doing for others that I got any relief. And because any time that I've ever like set out a goal to make more money or I'm going to be this, I mean, it's like I've reached some of them, but it's like, ugh, okay. I mean, I really get nothing out of that. the beauty is when you see someone that you think is less fortunate or mm-hmm. or like say never going to get sober, and they make a shift
mm-hmm.
because you cared about them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing better than that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would take that all day. You can have every nickel I have. It's not important because it is truly where I found my comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think you touched on it a little bit, but what sort of stigma is there about being in recovery or being somebody who has been through recovery?
That's a good one. The the stigma is that you are the person that you were
mm-hmm.
sober. When you were using, that you're going to be that person clean and sober.
Mm-hmm.
Say if you had to steal things to make money to buy your drugs,
mm-hmm.
people will think, oh, you're a thief.
Mm-hmm.
You're a thief because you did that. Now, mind you, you stole things,
mm-hmm.
and it's true. But there are the transformation is, you know, we have to be accountable to our actions. Of course, if you stole things, you know, in some recovery programs, there's ways to pay people back, make that amends. Absolutely. But you're not the same person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the ability to be the person that you want to be. And that's the best thing about, for me being in recovery is I never, ever dreamed that I would feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
Just simple life. And the relief in a nice lunch with friends, doing an interview, just simple things.
Mm-hmm.
When that wasn't your case, when you were like every minute of your day, you were consumed with one thing. You can't imagine what it's like to not be that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's the greatest thing in the world. It's just the freedom, you know. But people aren't the same sober. I mean, it takes a little while,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, but it's miraculous what happens to people when they do the work.
Mm-hmm. And what awareness do you want to share most in the overall struggle with substance abuse and chemical dependency? What do you want others to understand about your own experience and struggles? I mean, even some of the, it seems like, you know, finding yourself after.
Well, I think that, you know, if you're dealing with someone who's getting sober or been sober and all that, I mean, it is a huge, huge job to stay clean and sober because it's being an addiction, there are triggers, there's all that stuff. But, you know, the nice thing is I've been lucky enough to be surrounded by people who are patient
mm-hmm.
and tolerant and see, you know, maybe not in this arena all the way yet, but you're doing great here. You know, I mean, it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for anybody who's, you know, it's tough,
mm-hmm.
but it's worth every bit of it. You know, my mom was so proud of me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she just died in May. And it was such a relief because I just always thought that, like she would always worry about me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I knew that she was proud of me, like when she looked at me and I could just tell,
mm-hmm.
like she didn't worry. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's work, but it's you get paid way overpaid for that work.
Mm-hmm. So. And actually, yeah, can you talk a little bit about your family and particularly your mother who had such a big influence on you and, as you said, has just recently died, and what impact has that had on you, being them going through life and now with your having to see your mother go through cancer and then passing away? I mean, what impact has your family had on you?
Well, the thing about my My family is pretty basic. You know, mm-hmm. I have one brother. I have a great stepdad and a very supportive mom. But the thing is, they never did anything that they didn't enable me much.
Mm-hmm.
My mom did a lot when I was younger, and she realized that that wasn't helping, so that was a done deal years ago. The thing is, when you're really close with your family and you're mm-hmm. and you're an addict and an alcoholic, it's rough because those are the people that you want to save from your disease,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't always show up that way. I was last. There was one Thanksgiving when I went to Thanksgiving on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know what day it was.
Mm-hmm.
And all my mom said to me was, "Honey, it's Friday. Dinner mm-hmm. was yesterday." And I just remember how kind she was to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? She didn't say, "Where were you?" Nothing. She just was kind to me. And you know, those are the moments that ate at me more than anybody lecturing me saying, "You need to stop."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, because when you have those people around you, you want to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the cool thing about being in recovery is, what an example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people fall short of an expectation,
mm-hmm.
I like the fact that people have treated me with that kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's late or doesn't show up or somebody goes back out and drinks, I have to be as kind to them as the people were to me. And I'm telling you, I was surrounded by some pretty amazing people. My brother, when I was sober for 10 years, I called him and I said, "Wish me congratulations, it's been 10 years. And he said, "I forget that you even drank."
Well,
and I said, "You know, 10 years ago, that's all you thought about when you thought about me." So it's nice to be able to just participate in the relationship openly, mm-hmm. you know, and just be a brother or a son or a friend. I love that. There's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, this is me. The faults I still have, the good stuff, the bad stuff, the pretty normal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just really, really nice to have that base to start with.
Now, you are a gay man. You're married. And when did you sort of find out? And did you accept it at first, or was it a hard process? Or, like, I mean, how did that sort of work for you?
Well, I always knew.
Yeah.
But the being from a small town,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was very, very hard. But there again, I've always had people around me
mm-hmm.
who supported me.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest thing about that for me when I did come out was mm-hmm. I had these people who loved me,
mm-hmm.
like great friends from high school and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I hadn't been honest with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, why wouldn't I have told her?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't I have let my best friend know? Why wouldn't mm-hmm. I have done this? Because I didn't want to do that. You know, I didn't want to be dishonest, but it was rough. I mean, there were some really challenging and horrible moments, but there again, it's where you look at it,
mm-hmm.
the way you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
My, you know, in retrospect, I had a buffer of people that were, I mean, stronger than any punch or mm-hmm. anything that I ever got. You know,
mm-hmm.
even though horrible things happened, that was still there. And mm-hmm. I was very, very lucky
mm-hmm.
in that respect. And now, you know, the nice thing is it's night and day different. You know, when you talk about
yes.
marriage, it's like when I was 20 years old, if they would have said, "You're going to be able to get married," I would have said, "Okay, when the earth stops revolving,
mm-hmm.
and just to see what's happening and the kindness mm-hmm. that people showed. I never knew it was out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew I had a couple friends. I didn't know that there were like millions of people. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there was the. It's just unbelievable. And I was in Florida when mm-hmm. when they passed the gay marriage thing, and I was down there with a friend, and she was visiting with her mom, and I was just walking around, and I walked by the courthouse in St. Pete, and there was the building was cool, and I was walking, and I saw the line of people, and I was like, oh, I wonder if there a show or what it was, you know? And I realized there was people in line to get their marriage license. It was the first day. And it was all the way down the street. And when I noticed, I just sat on the curb and I sobbed. Mm-hmm. Because I never thought that that would ever, ever happen. And I was looking at those people thinking, I hope you know. I hope you know what it's like. And I hope if you don't know, to the young people there, mm-hmm. I hope you respect the people who do know, mm-hmm. you know, and that you inform yourself and you challenge yourself with that, because it's not something that's familiar to everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, just going to the courthouse and getting a marriage license is not the most common thing for most people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of cool to see, you know, the two ladies who got married the first day, they've been together for 53 years, and how nice. And then there were the two guys there who were 18, mm-hmm. and I thought, wow, those young men have grown up with Will and Grace, Ellen DeGeneres, mm-hmm. it's fine, mm-hmm. it's fine, but those ladies know a different life. Mm-hmm. And you know, the horrible thing about being discriminated on or discrimination in general is when it happens to you, you never get rid of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the questioning, mm-hmm. you know, like you still feel like my partner, if I would want to hold his hand at the movie theater, it's mm-hmm. uncomfortable to me. Mm-hmm. But I see kids who are 20 mm-hmm. walking there holding hands and they don't care. Mm-hmm. I hate that. Mm-hmm. But I will not settle for, because I know, mm-hmm. I won't settle now. I mm-hmm. thought it was my destiny to live that way. Mm-hmm. I can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I don't ask people to believe a certain way. You can believe anything you want, if it's religion or not. I'm not interested in that. Mm-hmm. My interest is respect. Mm-hmm. And I do that with not just, you know, the gay issues, but it's just people issues. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't treat people poorly. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a thing on one of my really good friends on Facebook. She said, mm-hmm. one of the worst things that could happen mm-hmm. is not raising a gay child. It's raising a child who would be cruel to a gay child. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the way that I look. You know, there are people who wish me dead for my lifestyle. But you know what? I can't. That's fine. Mm-hmm. If they have to believe what I say, then I have to believe what they say. Mm-hmm. You know, who tells each other? I don't want to be the judge and jury on that. But mm-hmm. I will be respectful of your beliefs if you're mm-hmm. respectful of mine. Mm-hmm. Case closed.
And you said, can you tell some of the listeners, especially if you're younger, what changes have come over the years? Because, I mean, definitely even when you were younger, it was much different the way that gay, lesbian, and bisexual and sort of gender issues were sort of looked at. And there's a lot of focus on marriage, and I think it's very important. But it appears there's also other issues. What more do you would like to see happen in the future? Not that you're speaking for anybody.
Right.
Yeah.
What I would like to see, it's yeah. just the I don't want to be a gay man.
Yeah.
I have friends who say, oh, I have my friend Joe is gay. Do you know him? Or I don't want to be that label. I want to be Douglas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to say my deaf friend Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get, that's what I would love to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up, when I grew up, it was like everyone was, this is my black friend.
Mm-hmm.
This is my deaf friend. This is my Asian friend. There was a label for everything, and it's so weird to me, because there are gay bars.
Mm-hmm.
There are gay-friendly restaurants. There are all this stuff, and it's like we have a gay pride parade.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it celebrates us, and I love that, but wouldn't it be nice if we didn't need that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could, I'm proud to be gay because I'm just gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how about I'm proud to be kind
mm-hmm.
and considerate of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a person and be done with that.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a really interesting thing, because do you see the similarities in some of these human rights movements, whether it be disability, gay, women's, African American, any sort of rights issue? I mean, do you see similarities in going through them? Not that they don't have their own things as well, but sometimes it seems like we look at them as isolation of each other.
Yes. I mean, when I just saw the anniversary of Matthew Shepard, it always just sickens me that someone could do that.
Mm.
But when you, there's always a target.
Yeah.
You know, it's the gay person.
Mm.
Or the black person.
Mm.
Or the police against the kids. Or there's a target.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that it's incredible how we put targets on people.
Well, I mean, in some ways, too, I can see, I mean, even the movements themselves try to sort of, this is our only movement. I mean, even when you get disability rights or gay rights, it sort of becomes singularly focused on one issue or certain issues. At least from my experience, and you can tell me how you feel differently, they're generally asking for somewhat of the same things, which is, in some ways, compassion and understanding and being able to be out in the world and not have to have be just labeled.
Absolutely. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous because when it comes down to it, there are no differences. You know, everybody, what do you want out of life?
Mm-hmm.
And most people will write down the same exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be in any demographic, any area of the world, and it will show up exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it weird that the minute that you stand up from writing that down, you forget when you judge that person for being overweight.
Mm-hmm.
Or you see that homeless person there who needs something, and it just amazes me how easy it is to forget what your core values are and and how you would like to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I believe everybody is capable of it.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that every person is capable of being kind and considerate and fair and respectful. It's just pattern.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
It seems that you've been able to sort of put that together. You know a ton of people. I know you're very well liked in the community. And I mean, what suggestions can you give to people to sort of be able to sort of accomplish that sort of well-meaning life where you seem to know everybody, your name around town?
Well, I think if you want to become something, if you want to improve yourself, you involve yourself with people who are improving things.
Mm-hmm.
If you like dancing,
mm-hmm.
Find people who dance.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to value what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to give back somewhere, because you have to step out of yourself and make yourself become that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can say, oh, well, I'm very, very busy at work. Well, you know what? How busy are you?
Mm-hmm.
Really? I'm surrounded by people who literally, how they even have time to eat, I don't know. And they do service work, they have kids, they do this. It's like, and they're the most joyful people ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tomorrow is the worst thing ever, because it's always going to happen tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do this tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything that I've ever done that's really kind of been fun was when I took the American Sign Language classes. One day I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a class. I picked up the phone. You know, I haven't taken a dance class in a couple of years. I picked up the phone. You have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no, like, when I'm not busy, because you know what? We always think we're too busy.
Mm-hmm.
We always think we don't have enough time. It's not going to happen. The best part of that is you have no idea what you're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought that I was capable of doing the things that I do or feeling the way that I feel when I do them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best part of life is just, oh my gosh, I just helped a person move, did this, you know, it's like, whew, gosh, in a day. And people say, oh my God, I don't know anybody busier than you. And it's like, well, I know 20 million people busier than me.
Yeah.
But I've always stuck with the winners.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because when I got sober, I didn't know how to stay sober.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a struggle for me. So I really kind of latched on to people who were great examples. Anything that I do, it's like I've humbled myself enough to say, I don't know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Will you help me?
Mm-hmm.
And it's turned it around.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't tell you how nice it is to be able to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Thank you so much. Is there any last things you'd want to share? Or thank you. This has been really amazing to hear from you today.
Well, it's been fun. As always, it definitely was not what I thought it was going to be. You know, I planned it all morning. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this, I'm going to say that, and oh, let me touch on that. And true to form, not one bit of the conversation in my head from this morning showed up here today, so that's probably a good thing. But it's been a pleasure to be able to be here and to help out where I can.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.